Have you ever heard of perpetual stew? Perpetual stew is something that has existed at least since medieval times, and it's still found in some parts of today's world. There is a popular restaurant in Bangkok. I've never been there. But there is a popular restaurant in Bangkok that offers a perpetual stew. And believe it or not, the broth in this restaurant soup has been cooking for 45 years. 45 years. For 45 years, as people have taken from that, more has been put in. And this restaurant, believe it or not, sells this stuff to a lot of people. In fact, it has received numerous awards for being the best broth in Thailand. Now, if you're thinking, well, he chose that illustration today because it's potluck day. No, that's not the reason. I selected this illustration to illustrate these two words. How long? How long will that broth in Thailand cook? I don't know, but I suspect for as long as they're making money and can stay in business. When we start looking at God's word, we find this question, how long, being asked on a number of occasions. It's used in a lot of different ways. In fact, as you look at this how long question, you find that primarily it either describes a question that's coming down from God to someone, perhaps an entire group of people, or you find how long coming up from people as they address God. Time and time again, we find that God is asking how long. In fact, if you go back and you look at all the places where how long is asked, you find that God, believe it or not, is the one who is asking the question more often than man. Now, that surprised me. I figured it would be man who would be saying to God, how long? And we do find that. But no, God is in the majority. If you were present last week, we looked at two different anthropomorphisms. When we think about an anthropomorphism, that, of course, is applying human characteristics to either an animal, an object, or perhaps God. God has never asked, and this is where we need to begin, God has never asked how long because he needed information. God has never asked how long because he did not know the answer to some question. You find that when God says how long, God is expressing his frustration. Since it is potluck day and our second service is going to be about one, we're going to spend the longer time as far as God looking at how long, how he does that, and then man looking at how long and his questions related to that at our 1 o'clock session. God began asking how long very early in the biblical narrative. As you go back to Exodus chapter 10, you have some information there about the eighth plague. In Exodus chapter 10 and verse 3, we find that Moses and Aaron, and they're having a conversation, and the question comes up from God's perspective, how long? God said, how long is it going to be before you release my people? We're now time for the eighth plague, and how much longer is it going to be before my people are freed from bondage? You see, as you look at this ruler of Egypt, he had gotten to the point, he'd resisted long enough where he had formed a pattern of behavior. It should have been after seven plagues that this guy had wised up a little bit, but Pharaoh had not gotten much smarter. He did not want to get with the program. As you start looking at this question from God, how long? You begin to find that it not only involved people who were not right with God, it involved the people who should have been right with God, including the children of Israel. You may remember that God's people were finally freed from Egyptian bondage. You have some information in Exodus chapter 14 as far as them crossing the Red Sea. Then as you turn over to Exodus chapter 15, you have this great song of triumph after they get through the Red Sea. Then when you come to Exodus 16, believe it or not, out of Egypt, Exodus 14, you have there, of course, as I mentioned, the people at that time, the crossing of the Red Sea, this great song of triumph, and then just in that 16th chapter, God says, how long? God's people, as you look at Exodus 16 and verse 3, they began to complain about this food. They were thinking back to Egypt and how good, at least in their minds, things had been there with the food, and God says, look, bread from heaven is going to come. That's in Exodus chapter 16 and verse 4. God, as he talks about this bread from heaven, as you read through Exodus chapter 16, he said this bread is going to come, it's going to be sent from heaven, and you're going to receive that 6 days a week. Well, that must have sounded like a pretty good arrangement to the people. Now, as you look at our country, and we've seen this demonstrated with things like toilet paper and paper towels, Americans like to buy up, stock up. Perhaps if we check the basements or the pantries right now, we would find that you have enough toilet paper and paper towels for 6 months. But suppose God said to you, you are only going to get one roll of paper towels and one roll of toilet paper at a time. When you get down to about the last two little pieces of paper in your toilet paper or paper towels, then I'm going to provide for you the next roll of towels. You're only going to get one at a time, and it's going to be this roll by roll, or for the Hebrews, day by day. Would you trust God to give you the next roll of paper towels? Would you trust God to give you the next roll of toilet paper? I suspect that there would be some people who would not pass the test. We know that as we look at Exodus chapter 16, that God's people were not passing the test. There were these people, God says in Exodus 16 and verse 4, I'm giving you this bread day by day to test you, to see how well you do. And then as you look at the account, you may remember that on day 6, God said, day 7, no collections on that day. So day 6, you're going to get twice as much, and that will carry you over for day 7. You're not going to go hungry, and you're not going to violate my will as far as you working on this day. In Exodus 16 and verse 25, the people were specifically told not to collect bread on the 7th day of the week. Now that's pretty clear, isn't it? God says there are 7 days in the week, and when day 7 comes, do not go out and try to collect any bread, because there's not going to be any. I do not know how much plainer God could have made that. Well, in spite of God saying that, notice what happened. Here's Exodus 16 and verse 27. And it came to pass on the 7th day, that was a day where God said, no bread's going to be there, don't go out and collect. On the 7th day, there went out some of the people to gather. God said, don't do that. But yet there were some people who decided to do that. And what does the text say? They found none. Big surprise. As I look at this passage, as I look at other verses in the Bible, I try to sometimes put myself back and think about me being part of the group. If I were among the Hebrews and God had said, he had made it clear, I'd heard the message, that there's not going to be any bread out there on day 7. Don't bother to go out and collect. It is wrong for you to go out and check out the bread. I'm wondering, would I have obeyed or not? Would I have been among the some here and decided, well, I know what he said, but I just want to go out and satisfy my curiosity. Or maybe I really lack faith and thought, I don't think that bread's going to come on day 7, so I need to go out and collect. Well, somebody says, I don't think that I would have gone. Well, okay, if you would put yourself in that category, then let me ask this question. After the people go out, what would you have done when they came back? Would you have gone up to them and asked, oh, did you find any? Because you're curious, just because you don't have 100% faith in God. Would you have perhaps positioned yourself where you can watch and see whether or not they're bringing any bread back? Or would you have been one of the people who perhaps would have said, you're wasting your time? This is what God has said. It is day 7. There will be no bread out there. You're not going to find the slightest morsel. Best to stay here. And then as you see him coming back, you can just don't even have to see what may be in their hands or pockets. You can just shout out and say, I told you so. Would our level of faith have been that great? Whatever our faith might have been, we know what God wanted from his people. Exodus 16 and verse 28. He wanted that obedience. He wanted that belief. And that was not what his people gave. Therefore, in Exodus 16, verse 8, the text says, and Jehovah said unto Moses, and again, this applies to the people, how long? There's a question. How long are you going to refuse to keep my commandments? How long will you refuse to keep my laws? God said, going out on the 7th day, that was an act of defiance. That was disobedience. They were not authorized to do that. God said, you are failing to keep my laws. You're failing to keep my commandments. And how much longer? God says, are you going to keep up this bad behavior? As we look at our lives, we find that we're not out there gathering bread. We find that we are under a different system and a better covenant. Even though we're under a different system, the question that we have here in Exodus 16 and verse 28 can still be asked. God can still be asking us today, how long will we refuse to keep part of his word? When we look at the Christian life, for most people living the Christian life, it's not difficult because people are ignorant. If certain situations are not specifically covered in the Bible, somebody says, well, what does the Bible say specifically about this? Well, the specific scenario that you've outlined, that's not specifically stated in Scripture. But we do have information which allows us to make a choice as far as right or wrong on virtually every subject. When God talks about living a life which is holy and righteous and sober-minded, when we are given information about being like salt and light, being separate, distinct from the people in society, what's right and what's wrong in the sight of God is not hard to understand. Rather than determine what's right or wrong, the challenge for most people is, how long? How long before we're going to do what God said is right? I don't know if you've been watching the calendar, but now more than a year has passed since all of us heard about COVID-19. It should not be a secret to anyone here that virtual worship has affected, I think, nearly every congregation that has some kind of electronic access. They've gone to Zoom or some other type of e-meeting. There are some churches, perhaps throughout the world, but certainly in the U.S., who are talking about they are considering going completely virtual. We no longer need a building. We're just comfortable with Zoom or some other form of assembly that is not a physical assembly. Can you not imagine that based on what we're looking at, that God asks this how long question, that he is perhaps asking how long will my people stay apart? How long will my people refuse to continue to come together in one assembly? 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 26. You see, as we start looking at Scripture, we find that the Bible begins with choice, Adam and Eve. We also find as we look at the final chapters in Revelation that it ends with the idea of choice. Adam and Eve had a choice. Pharaoh had a choice. Moses had a choice. The nation of Israel had a choice. Even Jesus had a choice. We certainly are given the ability to make a choice. When it comes to making a choice, we find that there are people, sometimes many people, who choose to procrastinate. For one reason or another, deciding to dally is not an uncommon practice. There are people who, as they go through life, they want to ride the fence. They want to sit on the fence day by day, year after year. And sometimes that fence sitting, sometimes that refusal to move really one way or the other is something that takes place in the spiritual realm. We find an example of that back in the Old Testament, 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 21. Here's some information about Elijah. Elijah comes to the people. This is in the context of that great contest with Baal. Elijah comes to the people and he says, "How long?" This man speaking for God asks the "how long" question. How long do you limp between two sides? If Jehovah is God, follow him. He says, if Baal is God, follow him. No longer sit on the fence. When we think about Jesus, he of course was deity in the flesh, as we learn from John chapter 1 verses 1 through 3. Do you remember that Jesus, as he is dealing with people, also asks the "how long" question? We're going to see that in just a minute. Jesus, as we think about his teaching, he showed people that the idea that we can have one foot in the world and one foot in the church, it doesn't work. It's never worked with God. Now, that's not really the American dream or the American way. We have people who say, let me eat my 5,000 calories a day and still drop 5 pounds a week. Folks, it just doesn't work like that. But in the spiritual realm, people sometimes have that mentality. I want all the candy, and yet I want all the good benefits as far as health benefits. Some things simply cannot go together. They are contradictory, and they must be kept separate. That's what you find in 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 21. Jesus, though, when he comes along, the same deal. Matthew chapter 17 and verse 17, Jesus says to some people, you are a generation that's faithless. You are a generation which is perverse. And Jesus, as he deals with these people, he says, how long? How long do I have to put up with you? Now, I think there's some people who, as they look at Jesus, they just think that he has infinite patience, and the same thing is true with God. Oh, he never gets tired of what people are doing. That is not true. God's patience, his patience do expire. And not only did Jesus say, how long, in Matthew 17 and verse 17, he doubled down on it. Notice that almost back to back, he asked this question, how long? Now, let's move forward 2,000 years. Let's think about our day and time. Is the God of heaven still looking down, if you will, on his creation and asking this how long question? He is. And he's asking the question of a lot of people. Have you ever met a Christian who was wounded? Ever met a saint who had been badly hurt by someone? And perhaps after we listen to a description of how they were treated, we would agree and say, yes, you were wounded. You were spiritually damaged, perhaps in the most severe kind of way. I've met some of those brethren. And if you talk to a wounded Christian, sometimes you'll find that they say, I quit. They may be able to give you the approximate time or maybe even the actual day that they decided to call it quits. The person who was once an active Christian, the saint who did serve Christ very faithful for a number of years, very faithfully, but now he or she has left the faith. If you speak to someone like that, they may say, because I was hurt. And maybe not just once. Maybe someone hurt me. Maybe the whole church hurt me several times by what they did or by what they failed to do. I've never gone back, and I will never, ever be back. Based on what we're looking at this morning, this question from God, would not this question be proper? How long are you going to nurse your wounds? How long are you going to let your hurts justify your inactivity? How long is it going to be before you restore your relationship with God? Now, the person who was wounded might say, well, you just don't understand. I was wounded. It was a terrible criticizer who tore me down, who destroyed my Christian life. We think about criticism. Matthew 7 comes to mind. Jesus talked about the person who has a beam in his eye, this long telephone pole, if you will, trying to correct the person who has something that's a very small defect in his eye. For the habitual critic in the church, and there are places where this is true, heaven is asking, perhaps, how long? How long will you criticize my bride? perhaps as an entire congregation or perhaps as just a small part, an individual member in that body? How long will you nag people? How long will you nitpick and pester people who have faults which are far fewer than yours? As you think about the people who are attacked, sometimes they are the people who feel insecure. They are the individuals who feel fearful. And it is that insecure, it is that fearful person who shrinks back and says, I just don't think I can be a Christian anymore. Or I'm a person who's doubtful. I'm a person who has a lack of confidence. My faith is weak. To these individuals, and we want to show as much compassion as we can, but to these individuals, there comes a time where God could also ask, how long? How long are you going to lack true faith in me? How long are you going to fail to seek my kingdom? Matthew 6 and verse 33. How long is it going to be until you really start using the power of prayer? How long is it going to be before you stop letting fear and the devil dominate your life and thinking? How long is it going to take before you decide to put your confidence in me instead of yourself and your own resources? When we begin to apply how long to our lives, and we start to look at our lives and ask that question in a number of ways, we may find that we may need to make a number of changes. For the gossip, how long will we continue to gossip? For the liar, how long will we continue to lie? For the half-hearted, how long will we continue to live an apathetic Christian life? For the person who uses foul speech, how long will we continue to curse and swear? For the person who is impatient, how long before we begin to demonstrate that Christian quality? For the person who is easily angered and is full of wrath, how long before you start getting that anger under control? You know, Paul talked about in Ephesians 4, the sun going down in our wrath. There are some people who have seen far too many spiritual sunsets. Bitterness, jealousy, envy. If we're in the grip of those sins, how long before we let them go? How long before we disconnect from the illegal drugs or the bottle? How long before we stop the fornication? If we've not forgiven someone, how long before we let go of those ill feelings? How long before we surrender the hate in our hearts? If we're a greedy or covetous person, which Paul said is idolatry in Colossians 3, how long before we stop that activity? For the person who comes to worship and it's just showing up, it's a mindless activity. How long before we begin to worship in spirit and truth? If we're not a Christian, the question also applies to us. How long before we name the name of Christ? I submit that there are some questions in life that we would not want to have God ask us. And one of those questions would be, how long? If God were to ask us, how long, in the sense that we're talking about this morning, in terms of our life, we would have a big, big problem. Thinking about all the things that we just looked at, and considering perhaps some things that were not on the list but apply to us right now, as we try to mentally scan our life, is there any way at all where we could say, truthfully, that God is looking at me this day, he has been looking at me perhaps for a long time, and God is saying, how long? If God would be asking that question of us this morning, will we say, God, I've waited too long, and I'm going to fix it, and I'm going to fix it now, as we stand and sing.
What will you do with Jesus? The question comes to you.